Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to America's Most Haunted. It is Teresa Argy, the Haunted Housewife, with you tonight. I am going solo at the helm. Eric is not with me tonight, but it is a very special show. Tonight we are with Ray Cannella, also known as Rayzilla, and he's back again on America's Most Haunted for a special monster of a show. Tonight we're talking about Godzilla. My favorite monster movie of all times, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. And with the upcoming remake, and that's coming up in just a week or so, we're going to talk all things Godzilla with Ray Cannella from Screambox. And if you remember our last interview with Ray, he talked a little bit about Screambox and what it is, and we're going to talk a little bit about that again. But mostly we're going to talk about Godzilla. But let me tell you about Ray. He spent a decade at the Sci-Fi Network developing films and growing the cable giant into the massive success that it is today. He is a self-proclaimed Godzilla superfan who grew up on the monster flicks from the 50s and 60s that set the tone for the genre. The original Godzilla movie still resonates with audience today, and it has inspired countless sequels, spin-offs, and reimaginings of the gigantic terror of Tokyo. And tonight we're going to talk about what we can expect from the new one, and we're going to revisit some of our old ones. So welcome to America's Most Haunted. Welcome, Ray Cannella.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Teresa. It's very nice. That's quite the introduction. Thank you. Thank you. I do have to tell you that I spent, and it's I know it's foolish of me to admit this, but I spent 2 decades at the Sci-Fi Channel.
2 decades.
Yes,
you work in both
did.
Of those, kind of work in the one.
I worked at Sci-Fi. I was part of the team. I was asked to join Sci-Fi before it was even on the air. So I was part of the team that launched Sci-Fi Channel back in 1992, if you can believe it. And I was just a little creature back then. I was just a younger Rayzilla back then. But I spent a great deal of time at Sci-Fi, and I was able, as a programmer, I was able to present the Godzilla films on the channel. We used to have theme weeks and stunts and all sorts of things where we would show the Godzilla films. So that was always a pleasure.
And, you know, when Sci-Fi first came out, a lot of us didn't have cable. I know I didn't have cable when it first came out, but
yeah.
I was still waiting for those annual events where they would actually show some of these movies. And I grew up on the Friday night horror films. We had a local show here in Cleveland called Big Chuck and Little John, or Houlihan and Big Chuck. They had a couple different hosts where they would show a monster movie, and then they would do skits in between. And it was wonderful, but I would wait sometimes for them to show some of these old classics. And then on Saturday afternoons, they would do the same things. And I remember those black and white monster movies, and Godzilla was by far my favorite. I absolutely love those, and that is kind of what I expected out of a monster movie. And now my son, my oldest son, is 22, so right about when Sci-Fi started, that's when he was born. And I think his generation, and even the one following, is so used to all the big special effects, and it's just a little bit over the top with the CGI sometimes, and sometimes I think it takes away from the beauty and the simplicity of those old films. I just love them. And I love Sci-Fi for what it's become, and I know it's developed, and it has changed, and there are some criticisms about the network, but my God, it was something that was so needed at the time. But
yes,
as we know, there's
20 years, you know, when you think about 20 years, and you think about how much the landscape of television and, of course, the explosion of the digital ecosystem, how much has changed in just 20 years. Believe it or not, 20 years isn't a whole lot of time. When Sci-Fi Channel launched in 1992, the cable landscape at the time was actually beginning to show signs of wear. It was beginning to get antiquated. Cable systems like Cablevision and Time Warner didn't have the channel capacity. This was before the digital age. So they didn't have the channel capacity to carry Sci-Fi Channel. So it stunted the growth of the network for I would say, good first 5 years, really stunted the growth of the network simply because the cable system itself, it wasn't digital yet. The digital age hadn't come upon us. But then once digital conversion came along, then Sci-Fi Channel exploded. But that actually brings me to where I am today with Screenbox and how much entertainment distribution has changed over the years. I'm thrilled to be a part of a horror channel that exists online, and I have big news because we're actually expanding to Xbox, Samsung, and Roku in the summer. So that's exciting news.
And for those of you who maybe didn't catch the last month's show with Ray, or maybe aren't familiar with Screenbox, let's tell everybody a little bit about it. I was so excited about this, and I subscribed, of course, because I had to. But tell everybody exactly what it is. What is Screenbox, and what is the advantage of Screenbox over just kind of watching cable TV or renting at the DVD kiosk?
Well, you know what? Ask any teenager what the difference is between watching movies online and watching movies on cable, and they'll tell you what, and they'll say to you, "What's cable?" in some ways, a lot of the millennials, the next generation, doesn't have cable. First of all, they certainly can't afford cable. And they'd rather have their Xbox, to be frank. I have two teenage daughters, and if I were to throw them out of the house, they would refuse to leave without the Xbox because it's their absolute world. And neither of my teenagers have cable. So what Screenbox is, to put it in its simplest terms, Screenbox is sort of the Netflix of horror, if you will. We are a horror-specific channel that presents horror films uncut, unedited, no commercials, no advertisements, no pop-ups. We are a subscription service. So for $2.99 a month, you gain access to our library. And our library is quite robust. We have everything from the classics to 70s grindhouse to 80s exploitation films, right up until contemporary independent films. We have theatricals from the 90s, theatricals from the 80s. We hope to expand into documentaries and into series. And again, it's a simple subscription service, just like a Hulu Plus service or a Netflix service, except we're Screenbox and we're horror and only horror. So come summer, and I'm going to say July 1st at the moment, because that's the latest word I have. Come July 1st, we are going to launch on Xbox, Roku, and Samsung. And this way you'll be able to not only enjoy us – oh, and we're launching a website as well. So not only will you be able to enjoy us online with a very robust website and a very robust community, but you'll also be able to take us with you as an app on your mobile device.
That's amazing.
Ain't that cool?
That's so cool. I mean, I subscribe to Netflix as well, and I love Netflix. It came in very handy when I needed to do some research, especially when I was writing the book with Eric. But there's something, the Screenbox is different because my only problem with Screenbox is there's so much to choose from. I don't know what I want to watch because there's so many different films, and there's these
good
films.
Good problem to have.
And you can find different kinds of films that maybe you hadn't heard of, and you can explore and discover these new directors and these new filmmakers, and it's fabulous. And I love all the foreign horror that you have on there, too. It's really great for anybody who's a real true fan of the horror genre. Screenbox is really, it's really fitting in and it's filling a need that I think cable can't even touch. So I'm
you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. And not only that, we at Screenbox have a very purist approach to the genre in that again, the films, there's no editing, there's no censoring, there's the pop-ups aren't going to appear, there's no ads, anything like that. It is horror the way that it's meant to be watched. My biggest problem with cable are the commercials. It's that simple. Even shows like Walking Dead and American Horror Story, I have difficulty getting through because of the commercial breaks. I find it very disruptive. Even when I DVR the shows, I got to be honest with you, and I'm still fast-forwarding through the commercials, it bounces me out of the horror. And as far as the value goes, I know we want to get to speaking about Godzilla, but I just want to say that cable as a value compared to online, cable is losing its value. People, more and more people are unplugging. You receive how many channels at home? How many channels do you get? 300, 400 channels, maybe?
If that, and a lot of them are repetitive. You know, they're the high definition version of one that we already have.
So if you took a slip of paper and you wrote down all the shows you watch on that piece of paper and what channel they're on, you'll find that you watch between 9 and 14 channels, and that's it. You're paying for several hundred, but the truth of the matter is that you're only watching between 9 and 14, and you're spending money on material you're simply not watching. And it's become a video on demand world. It's become an a la carte world. And this is one of the reasons why I'm excited to be out of cable and into the digital ecosystem and doing a subscription channel. Now, I just want to let everybody listening to know that we also we have a Facebook page, and we're running a contest.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Tell them about the contest. Tell everybody about
the contest. We got to let folks know that we're running a contest now. We have Screenbox has a Facebook page. It's Screenbox TV, okay? And you run on over there because we're giving away Godzilla stuff. And let me tell you something. When it comes to Godzilla stuff, we picked out D's and toys and shirts. It's enough to drive you insane, and we hope that that's the end result. So you got to head over to the Facebook page and check out our contest, and please like the page, follow, and you can also follow Screenbox TV on Twitter, and you can also follow me, Rayzilla, Rayzilla SX. S is in Screenbox, X is in, well, Xbox, and you can follow me on Twitter, and you can keep up with all the contests and with all the contests that we're doing. You can keep up on the latest news of the launch. This is really sort of going to be a relaunch of Screenbox come July 1st, and that's going to be very exciting. And again, there's going to be a website as well. And you mentioned, Teresa, that we're filling a void, and you're absolutely correct because, I don't know if people heard the news or not, but FearNet is going away. FearNet is going dark.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yes, that was announced, I think, the middle of last month, that FearNet is going dark. FearNet is owned by Comcast. Comcast bought up, well, FearNet was owned by several companies. I don't want to get into too many details. They were owned by several companies. Comcast bought out all its partners, and they're going to take the content of FearNet and spread it across the Sci-Fi Channel and Chiller. Okay, so that's what's happening to FearNet. So FearNet is going bye-bye. And when you look at the landscape of horror entertainment right now, Chiller isn't exactly, you know, I mean, to me, that's horror light, in my opinion. It's not commercial breaks and, you know, severe editing of the content, and you're not seeing, you know, not only do they edit the content for, you know, violence and such, but they make it shorter just to fit more commercials. So if that's the choice that horror fans have right now out there, I think Screenbox is going to be the perfect alternative. So, yes, Screenbox is here to fill the void, or at least drag everyone kicking and screaming into the void, right?
Absolutely.
The void of terror. The void of horror.
Jump in. The sad thing about cable, and again, when it first came out, it was great, and we were all digging it. Even my friend Joe said in the chat room, you know, cable, the big selling point of cable when it first came out is there was no commercials. So you could watch these films uninterrupted, and that gives you more of the theatrical experience because still, honestly, there is nothing like sitting in a theater watching a film. But, you know, with the pop, that's not something that we do as often as we used to. At least I don't. I don't go to the movies that much anymore. But I tell you, when you're especially with a horror movie, you don't want to break that suspense. So it is nice to have it on demand. It is nice to be able to watch it all the way through uninterrupted. And you don't have, you know, they're editing it or they're even the picture gets changed, you know. And when you're talking about when you worked at Sci-Fi when it first came out, when I lived in Los Angeles many years ago, two decades ago, before my son was born, I worked in a post-production house. And this is before things were just starting to go digital. And Sony was one of our clients, and we were just moving these big, heavy, 2-inch, 1-inch video tapes. And that's when you could still go to the video store and buy these. And we were moving them onto the digital format. And I tell you, it was kind of a slow going at first, but once it took off, you know, the networks, they couldn't keep up with it because then it was, that's all it was digital. So things
and now. And now the networks have what are called, or what used to be called, a tapeless environment. Now everything's files.
Yep, everything is. It's amazing. I remember I went on maternity leave. I took a year off. Actually, I took more than a year off. I took almost 2 years off. But when I came back to the industry, I was so far behind technically. That it was almost like I had to be retrained. So I ended up just kind of getting out of that business and moving into something else. But it's amazing how fast the digital world moves. And I think that the subscription online movies, that's what everything's going to. Look at the television series that are moving online. I mean, Netflix is having great success with their original content series that is only available online. And I think we're going to be seeing more and more of that because people – frankly, are getting sick of the commercials. They're being sick of told what to watch and when to watch it. You know,
yeah,
they want to watch.
The genie is out of the bottle. You know, I sat and watched as my teenage daughters obliterated the way I use television. So, you know, that was one of the turning points for me as a programmer. Was to see how drastically viewer habits have changed, particularly in the last 5 to 10 years. Within the last 10 years, binge viewing has begun. That wasn't something that existed 10 years. 10 years ago, I think Netflix was still delivering DVDs to your house. So the landscape changes so rapidly, and that's why, for me, it's a privilege to be working with Screenbox, to be working in the digital ecosystem, to be working towards the new frontier of the distribution of entertainment, and to be able to be working in a genre that I really, really, really love. And, you know, like I said, we have a purist attitude towards horror. We are presenting horror films the way that they should be presented. And the story, you know. So I'm looking forward to July 1st. It's going to be great. Once we have the website and everything up and rolling, you're going to see a much more robust Screenbox channel.
And I tell you, Eric and I waited. We've been on this America's Most Haunted, the book, the radio show, everything we've been doing. It's been a 2-year project. And we just launched our website maybe 2 months ago, a couple months ago. It was such a big undertaking to get that thing done. I mean, and I didn't know exactly how much work went into it. To me, I was like, oh, it's just like a Facebook page. No, it's a big deal, but it really brought
the audience.
Oh, boy,
you're telling me.
Oh, God. I wish I was a little more tech savvy, but I'm not. So I understand, and I tell you, I can't wait for Screenbox to launch. I think that I'm just so excited. I'm so jealous of your job. I really am. I'm so jealous of it. I think it's fantastic what you can do. And I am a ghost hunter. I'm a paranormal investigator. But you know, it all started with those horror movies, and that's what got me going when I was younger. Cool. And it's a love carried through to this day. And I'm, of course, what, 29 now? yeah. So for all of my 29 years, I've really enjoyed it, and I think this is fabulous. This is great, especially for someone like me who can't sit down and watch a movie when it happens to be airing on cable. And I don't get out to the theaters that much, and I don't get to Redbox that much, so this is great.
And you have to watch it, well, you know, unless you have the app or the device, or you pay the subscription fee, which is so high, you know, for HBO, you pay a high subscription fee. And then you get 8 other HBOs with it, by the way. You get 8
yeah.
HBOs, and I think you get like 10 Stars channels. And you literally don't know what the hell. I mean, you can't possibly watch it all, you know. So they hit you over the head for a big fee and then hand you a bunch of stuff that you're never going to look at, that you're never going to watch. So it's an on-demand world. And people who love horror films can come to a central place, a focal point, a place that we like to call a horatorium.
Horatorium,
where,
I like that.
Yes, where horror fans and future filmmakers and those who appreciate the genre, those that are curious about the genre, can stop by and have a look. And, you know, talk about inspirations. I mean, Godzilla was one of my earliest inspirations, really, along with King Kong as a little kid. So to be able to present, you know, sci-fi back in, my goodness me, it was the late 90s. Sci-Fi Channel was one of the first cable channels to present Destroy All Monsters letterboxed, which used to be a big deal back in the 90s, kids. I remember having to convince the senior staff of Sci-Fi Channel why showing films letterboxed is becoming more preferable than showing standard 4:3 aspect ratio screen size. They were literally, you know, arguing with me, but what's the black at the top and the bottom of the screen, believe it or not? that's a true story. I had to explain to them that what you're seeing is the actual frame of the film. You're seeing more of the image, and they're saying, no, you're not seeing more of the image, and I'm saying, yes, you are. But anyway, if you so if you watched Sci-Fi Channel back in the late 90s, you saw one of the first airings of Destroy All Monsters letterboxed to be shown in the United States, and I had a little bit of a hand in that happening. So, for me, yes, I consider myself incredibly lucky. You think I'm lucky. I think I'm incredibly lucky to have had a career that involves films that I care about so much and a genre that I adore. You know, so to be involved is indeed a pleasure and a privilege.
I'm excited just the fact that I can sit here and talk about monster movies and Godzilla. Not that they pay me for this, but just that I can do it and at all. Fabulous. Yeah. But the reason that we had Ray come on this week, this month, was not just because we love him so much, but because it is actually the premiere of the new Godzilla flick. Godzilla 2014 edition is coming out on May 16th. And I tell you, I couldn't be more excited. I was not excited for the last remake, the big-budget remake, the Roland Emmerich film that came out in 1998. It was very disappointing. Wasn't a fan. There were some good moments in the movie, and it was still a monster movie. So, of course, even a bad monster movie is still a good day for me. But I'm really excited. The previews for this look great. And no, folks, I did not get a screener. I had so many people ask me if I got a screener for this movie, and I did not. So I'm in the same ballpark as everybody else. I have not seen it yet, just the previews. But I'm really excited about this. And it's also, this is your birthday month, Ray, isn't it? Aren't we celebrating your birthday sometime this month?
Yes, the movie comes out the day after my birthday, which is so nice. It's a nice little thing. I'm going to definitely run out to the theater and check it out. I'm optimistic about this one. I'm really hoping that that above all else, that they respect the source material, and I think that was the difference between the 1998 film and this film. The 1998 mm-hmm. film really showed no respect whatsoever to the source material. It simply wasn't Godzilla.
It just some strange monster. I mean,
yeah. It wasn't Godzilla. It was a smaller creature. It was in my opinion, it was a weaker monster than Godzilla. He didn't breathe. Fire. It resembled more like the Lost World than it did a Godzilla film. I went to the premiere of the 1998 film. I was invited to the premiere. The premiere was held at Madison Square Garden back in 1998 because, a large portion of the film takes place in Madison Square Garden. So I myself and a few members of the staff from Sci-Fi Channel were actually invited to the premiere. And what they hung a huge movie screen inside Madison Square Garden. They partitioned the room somewhat. It wasn't full, but it was certainly a boatload of people. It was a ton of people. And the movie was so terrible. It was bombing. You can literally see the movie bombing with the audience premiere. Now, on the floor was all the A-listers. All the A-listers sat on the floor, and they had a big screen up in this and that. And then the riffraff, we all sat up on the upper sections, the worker bees, all hid in the upper sections. And I don't know how well you remember the film because I've erased most of it from my mind. But there's a point in the movie where you almost think the film is over. Right after they blow up all the little Godzillas inside Madison Square Garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
People started dashing for the exits. and people started running for the exits, and the movie wasn't even over. And it's sort of a false ending. There's a moment in the film where they frame up Matthew Broderick and all the main characters, and the music swells and the camera pulls out, and then suddenly you hear Godzilla's voice or the creature's voice in the film, and the camera pushes back in. The movie's not over yet. So people were running for the exits. They were like, Get me the hell out of here. This movie was bombing so badly. It made money for the studio, but it was a bad film. It was just weak in every sense of the word. Now I've heard that this new film is going to pay more respect to the source material, and that the tone of the movie is going to be closer to the tone of the original Godzilla, and the original Godzilla film Gojira was a very dire movie, was a very ominous movie. And I'm sure do you know the difference between the two versions of the original Godzilla?
No, I do not. I mean, I think I do, but I don't want to be wrong. So,
well,
tell us.
Well, there are two versions of the first film from 1954. Okay, the original film is called Gojira, which translates in Japanese to, I guess kind of a whale creature, almost a gorilla whale, if you will, because the creators of Godzilla were inspired by King Kong, the creators of Godzilla. So the original film, Gojira, Raymond Burr is not in the Japanese version of Godzilla. He only appears in the American version, and that's how you could tell the difference between the two versions. In the American version, Raymond Burr plays a reporter, oddly enough named Steve Martin, by coincidence. He plays a reporter named Steve Martin who's reporting on the tragedy of Godzilla stomping all over Tokyo. Well, in the original Japanese version, there is no American reporter whatsoever. Okay? The story is much more serious and is, well, a metaphor for the bombing of Hiroshima. The American version with Steve Martin, the American version with Raymond Burr makes a whitewash of many of the nuclear references that exist in the original Japanese print, in the original Gojira, okay? For instance, the creature destroys a fishing village in the Japanese version, and the camera pans around the rubble, and you see a man pulling his wife out of the rubble. And as they pull themselves to safety, he looks up and he says, "We survived Hiroshima for this?" Now, dialogue like that was removed from the film when the film made its way to the United States. Dialogue like that and scenes like that of the doctor who creates the oxygen destroyer device that ultimately kills Godzilla at the end of the film, well, he commits suicide in the movie. And he struggles with, he plays this Oppenheimer-type character who struggles with creating such a destructive weapon. So there's metaphor galore. You know, Godzilla itself is this enormous, unstoppable, radioactive force that lays waste to everything in its path. That's the metaphor. That's what the creators of Godzilla were going for. And so that's what the original Gojira is. Now, once the film was completed and was brought to the United States, well, the U.S. said, U.S. film distributors said, no way are we putting this out. We have to lose the references to the bombing of Hiroshima and put an American actor in it. And that's when Raymond Burr's scenes, if you notice, he shares very few scenes with other actors. His scenes were shot completely separate and it's later inserted into the film.
Yeah, that entire monologue where he's just describing the destruction that's going on and what Godzilla is doing. The entire thing, and I think even as a child, I knew, and with my little barely formed brain, I knew even as a young person that they were referencing, a nuclear disaster and the bombing of Hiroshima, and I could make those connections, not so much in the political sense, but in the very basic sense, I could make those connections. But I remember sitting there as a young child. Watching that and watching Raymond Burr, who I didn't really know as an actor. I knew he was an American actor, and I couldn't figure out for the life of me why everyone else was speaking in Japanese and it was dubbed in English and he was speaking English. But that was the addition that they made with the American version. And that I just couldn't figure that out. I'm like, how did they get these people? They're speaking in Japanese, but he's speaking in English, but then they're dubbing it over in English, and it was a bit confusing, but I tell you that it was captivating. I mean, they handled it so well, and it seems kind of cheesy now when you look back at it, but not to me. But I know that if my children saw it today, they would be like, what's going on? But it the way it was done, and I understand, and it's unfortunate that they had to make the changes that they did, but I think that Raymond Burr in the American edition, I think, is a very powerful scene, and then when the building comes crashing down on him and is he dead, is he alive, what's going on, and you can see the sweat and you can see the tear coming down off his face. I think it's very powerful. I mean,
well, it's a testament to the original film, because no matter what incarnation, both had a dramatic impact on audiences. The American version was just as much successful in the U.S. as the Japanese version was successful in Japan. And that's a testament to the creators of Godzilla, because they really, you know, they used metaphor and they used real events to create this character. And that's the creators were Tomoyuki Tanaka and Ishiro Honda were the two men who conceived the idea of Godzilla, obviously using Hiroshima and Nagasaki as metaphors. But also there was an incident in 1954, a fishing boat called the Lucky Dragon. The Lucky Dragon unfortunately drifted into an area where the U.S. military were doing the nuclear testing, and they were exposed to radiation. And the five men, they were known as the Lucky Dragon Five. The five men all died of radiation poisoning. So, and these were actually the first victims of, they were really like the first, you know, some of the first victims of those, first and only victims of those tests that we know of. So that incident being fresh in the minds of Japanese people, and, well, Hiroshima only being less than a decade, happening less than a decade ago, these two incidences were fresh in the minds of the Japanese public, and these two gentlemen held a mirror to society and felt that they can tell the story using a creature as metaphor. Now, it's very easy to look down, you know, it's very easy for people on the outside to look down their nose at these particular films, because they see the toy trucks and the toy cars and the special effects and all of those things. And so it is easy to chuckle, and some of the Godzilla films that came later on in the 70s really aren't much better than the one that came out in 1998. When was the Roland Emmerich? Was it 98? Yeah, it was 98. You know, it's very easy to look down your nose at these sort of films, but there really is a tremendous amount of message in many of them, environmental messages mostly in all of the films. And that's why I think I enjoyed them so much, and that's why I think Godzilla stands the test of time. Look at how many years later it's been now, and over 20 Godzilla films.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about Godzilla and how he's changed cinematically over the years, because I'll tell you, some of my favorite Godzilla moments from watching the movies are when Godzilla kind of transformed from being the monster of Tokyo to being more of the protector of Tokyo, and when he was fighting the other monsters. And we have to, Ray, we have to find some time to talk about baby Godzilla, because I just got to talk about him a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about how Godzilla, I'm sorry, I just love him. Let's talk a little bit about how Godzilla has changed cinematically over the years from 1954 to what we can expect of the 2014. I don't even want to include the 98 version. To me, the Cloverfield monster that we didn't even get to see was more reminiscent of Godzilla to me than the 98 film. But
The 98 movie was, I call it Godzilla versus Ferris Bueller, and that's the nickname I've given that film. But yeah, I'm more, it's very funny, because in Toho Studios answered after with a film called Godzilla 2000, and there's a very funny scene in Godzilla 2000. When the Japanese Navy is being briefed on the reappearance of Godzilla, and one soldier leans over to the other and says, "Wasn't there a Godzilla sighting in America a few years ago?" And the other and the other Japanese sailor says, "No, they thought it was Godzilla, but it wasn't." And that's the line in the film from Godzilla 2. And that's a little bit of a dig at Sony, you know, for saying, "Hey, you didn't make a Godzilla film." But now, I don't know if you're aware, but the eras of Godzilla, Godzilla is broken down into three different eras. three different series, if you will. And the series that I grew up with is known as the Showa series, and that extended from 1954 to about, 1973, the Showa series. And that's when, you know, Godzilla was really very much established. And we had the original film Godzilla, King of Monsters, and then we had, you know, all of the classics that we've come to know and love, you know, Return of Godzilla, King Kong versus Godzilla, the Rodan films, King Ghidorah. That is what the a lot of the fans consider to be the core era of Godzilla films. And I have in my collection an autograph from Hiro Nakajima. Now, Hiro Nakajima was the man who played Godzilla from 1954 to 1972. He was the guy that was actually in the Godzilla costume. And I got to meet him at a convention. And he told some very fascinating stories. He nearly drowned wearing the damn costume.
Whoa.
The early Godzilla suit was highly, well, first of all, you know, it weighed a couple of hundred pounds. It wasn't terribly practical, the original Godzilla suit, and it absorbed water like a sponge, and so, you know, you can only shoot so much before the suit began to absorb water like a sponge. There were all forms of technical problems. The suit would catch fire. there was, you basically... Mr. Nakajima had to avoid suffocation, burning, and drowning, all while performing inside the Godzilla costume. So, but that was the Showa series, and then after Showa series,
No CGI.
No CGI, no. Obviously, everything was optical printers back in the day, traditional film technique back in the day. Now, as a little kid growing up, the very first Godzilla film I saw was King Kong versus Godzilla. And, you know, we'd have bizarre tradition here in New Jersey. On Thanksgiving, and this is back in the 70s, on Thanksgiving Day, the one of the local channels would show the original King Kong and then King Kong versus Godzilla back to back.
Here in Cleveland too, it'd be King Kong and Wizard of Oz on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We'd watch those.
I don't know why, but it was one particular Thanksgiving that I watched both films all the way through, and I was hooked. I had to be about 9 years old, and that was it. I was absolutely stunned and mesmerized and completely hooked. So really, the Showa series is the one that really was, you know, for me, the originator and the, you know, the catalyst and the foundation for the Godzilla franchise. But then there was the Heisei series. So I hope I'm pronouncing a lot of these correctly. Now, the Heisei series picked up in 1984. There was a film called Godzilla 1984, which also starred Raymond Burr. And the Heisei series really went from 1984 to 1995. And I really love this era. Now, Godzilla 1984 isn't one of the top, you know, 10 Godzilla films. It basically is, it's the first reboot of Godzilla. And it's not the best by any means. It's kind of marginal, okay? But really, this is when the Godzilla franchise started to turn a corner and the films became a little more serious, less jokey. The special effects started to get a little bit better because, you know, now we're talking, we're talking the mid-80s now. The return of Godzilla in 1984, 1985, around then, the movie's improved. The movie's got just a little bit better, but I always point to Godzilla versus Biollante. Are you familiar with this one?
Godzilla and what?
Godzilla vs. Biollante, which came out in 1989. It was the follow-up to Godzilla 1984.
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
All right, Godzilla vs. Biollante from 1989 is very much a turning point, a very big turning point in the Godzilla franchise that really sent the character Godzilla in the direction that he's in now. Really, this was the really first modern, really modern take, and there's still no CGI at this point. But I urge everyone to see Godzilla vs. Biollante, because Biollante is a creature that is grown by scientists using Godzilla's own DNA.
Ooh.
So the creature is a Godzilla type of creature, but see it mostly because of the turning point in the storytelling and a turning point in the presentation of the visual effects. The visual effects get much in the HiC series. They really begin to turn up the heat. Now, in my autograph collection, I also have, besides having Hiro Nakajima, I also have Ken Satsuma, and Ken Satsuma played Godzilla during this era as well. He played Godzilla from 1984 to 1995, and I got a chance to meet him. And so, what a pleasure for me to be able to meet the two guys who really, really, played, and Hiro Nakajima not only played Godzilla, but he played a lot of the secondary characters as well in the Toho films and the non-Godzilla films. He was also inside the costumes and he was training other people. And the nice thing about Ken Satsuma, who started playing Godzilla in 1984, was that he was taught by Hiro Nakajima. So Ken Satsuma was playing, like Megalon and Gigan. In 1972, he was playing those creatures then in 72, so he got his chance to play Godzilla in 1984 with the first reboot. And then the final era of the Godzilla films is known as the Millennium series. And the Millennium series goes from 1998 to 2004, which was the very last Godzilla film. The very last Godzilla film was called Godzilla Final Wars. And it's a damn good movie, actually. And they kill off Godzilla, and Toho said that they would not make another Godzilla film for 10 years. And it's been 10 years. So I find it very interesting that that exactly 10 years later, a Godzilla movie is coming out. But
a lot of us are not these other films. A lot of us are only familiar with the big ones, the big Hollywood ones, maybe the original, some of the older ones, the 98 one and the one coming out. Let's talk a little bit about how the character of Godzilla has changed. Because like we know from the original, he destroyed Tokyo and he's this terrifying monster and he's doing all these horrible things. But then as the movie progresses, he starts fighting other monsters, and he's almost looked at, in some of the films at least, as a hero, as like a protector. And then it does get quite
Absolutely.
Campy, I know, and my baby Godzilla comes in, and I know, but I still love him. But when does that change, and how do they kind of explain that this creature that was once destroying everything in sight now comes and starts fighting these other monsters? I remember Rodan. I remember Mothra. I remember these monsters. And just And it was just amazing that you could go from, oh, no, it's Godzilla, to, yay, Godzilla, get him, kill him, you know, and rooting for him. And because, honestly, as terrifying as he is, I loved him. And I was happy to be able to root for him. You know, it was weird. I'd never had that experience as a horror fan, as somebody watching a movie that you could, it was okay to cheer for the monster. And that's how I felt
yes,
with those
yes,
films.
Yes, right. Well, you know, I mean, again, well, that's because the creators of Godzilla used King Kong as a template. And King Kong is a very, very, very sympathetic creature. And so originally, yes, Godzilla was the metaphor for the apocalypse, absolutely. Within the first couple of films, he was still a menace. But ultimately, the appeal of Godzilla, the audience got younger and younger. And the studio and the producers took note of this. And so they tried to find a way to make Godzilla an Earth protector. Since they introduced other creatures, Godzilla versus the sea monster, Godzilla versus the smog monster. In one of the earliest films, Godzilla versus Mothra, it's really Mothra that is sort of the Earth protector. In that particular film, Godzilla is still sort of a bad guy in that movie. Mm. But as the audience demographic and the audience appeal got younger and younger, the tone of the films got younger and younger. Now, when during the High Sea series, Godzilla again started off as a menace, but also became an Earth protector as well during these series of films. Again, Godzilla versus Biollante, Godzilla versus Space Godzilla, where there is a threat from outer space. Again, Biollante's DNA is taken yet again, and a clone of Godzilla is created from outer space. And so Godzilla, even during the second series, the second incarnation, Godzilla still eventually becomes this Earth protector. It's only towards the end of the High Sea era that Godzilla begins to be portrayed as an animal. And if there's one movie that I recommend you see from this era, it's the final film from the High Sea era. And it's called Godzilla versus Destroyer. And it's probably one of the best Godzilla films in the series, of all the Godzilla films. It is hands down one of the best, because Godzilla is dying from the
Ooh.
Opening scene. In the opening scene, his body is glowing red, and steam is rising from his skin. The nuclear reactor that is at Godzilla's core has reached its limit. Godzilla's dying. And so Godzilla's behavior is erratic. He looks different. The breath, his fire breathing is different. He attacks China, which is unusual. He attacks mm-hmm. mainland China. The film opens with him attacking Hong Kong, which is unusual for Godzilla. It's an excellent, excellent film, and the final scene, and I'm gonna ruin it for you, but because a lot of Godzilla fans already know this, this is the film where Godzilla dies. They kill him in this movie, and Godzilla's death scene is done as beautifully and as dramatically as I think any scene I've ever seen in any monster film. And so, if you haven't watched this one, I really recommend that you run out and see it, and you rent it, or if you have to end up spending $9.99 on the DVD, go out and see Godzilla versus Destroyer, and the year is from 1995. There is a little bit of computer animation in there. CG had begun to work its way into the films, but really mostly for Godzilla's breath and landscape. Special effects and things like that. No heavy CG, But Godzilla vs. Destroyer is one of my personal favorites. It's a superb movie. And they use the same device that killed Godzilla in the first, in the original film. This is the same device.
Excellent.
In the 1995. I'm really serious. Go see this one. This is a superb, superb, superb movie. And then that series came to an end. That series came to an end, and then it started up again after the Matthew Broderick, after the 1998 film. A new series began, even better special effects, more intense storytelling, and then they killed them off again. So I recommend Godzilla Final Wars. It's excellent. It's like another Destroy All Monsters. It's Rodan, it's Mothra, it's Mechagodzilla. It's like WWE of Godzilla films.
SmackDown. So now this new film, you probably have a little more info on it than I do, being as I am just the Haunted Housewife and you are Rayzilla. And if you haven't heard, folks, it stars Bryan Cranston, which immediately it's going to be a winner in my mm-hmm. book. The mm-hmm. previews amazing. The monster looks terrifying, and he looks a lot like the original Godzilla, the real Godzilla. And it looks fabulous. Do you know a little bit about the story? I mean, I know a little bit about the story, but what can you tell us about this new film and the plot line of this new film, and how do you think this is going to play out for audiences?
Well, first and foremost, I think the movie is going to be successful financially. I think that's a no-brainer. But is it going to be a good movie? You know, the 1989 film made a lot of money. Financially, it was a big success, but it was not a good film. This new version appears that they're going to be taking the source material very seriously, and they really want to make a traditional kaiju film. Now, you know, kaiju is the term given to these kinds of movies, the Godzilla films, the Gamera films. Kaiju means a giant monster. So if you saw Pacific Rim, did you see Pacific Rim by any chance?
I did not.
Pacific Rim is a kaiju film, and in fact, they call the creatures in the movie kaiju. That's the name that they give them. The kaiju actually refers to this type of cinema. You have traditional Japanese kabuki cinema. You have traditional shadow puppet cinema, shadow puppet theater, I should say, kabuki theater, and then you have kaiju. And so kaiju is a particular type of genre. This new film looks to be like a solid kaiju film. It's not just Godzilla. It's going to be multiple monsters.
Yes,
there's some
new monsters. What are the Mutos? Is that what they're called?
I don't know. One of them looks like Rodan to me, but like I said, it as long as they show respect to the source material, I think that the film will be fine. But other than that, honestly, I don't know all that much more about it.
Mm-hmm. It looks good. I know that there's an introduction of more monsters. I just from looking on the website and seeing the previews.
I don't think you're really going to see any reviews until after the week because
probably.
it doesn't open this weekend. It opens next weekend.
Right. And before we go off the air, please, everybody, go to the Screambox Facebook page and look for the giveaway. We're still going to be talking, Ray, in a minute, but the live feed is going to go off in about 30 seconds. So if you want to get in on the go to the Facebook Screen Book page. You got to like the post, share the post, and like the Screen Book Facebook, Screenbox Facebook page to be entered in the drawing. We will be announcing the winner on the show here next week in the second half of the show. So there's still time to get in on it and check it out, and we'll be doing more posts about that. That's and just in case they're listening live, it's going to go off in about 10, but we're going to keep talking. So, okay. Yeah, the new Godzilla comes out on the 16th, but check us out here on the 13th. And when it does go, I think the opening weekend is going to be huge because, honestly, I don't think there's anything else coming out this weekend or that weekend.
Yeah, no,
is there anything else that looks like
I think there's room for Spider-Man 2 to take another big chunk out of the weekend,
coming up.
And then Godzilla will probably do major damage the weekend it opens.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Spider-Man movies. I think they were just kind of remade too quickly and kind of shoved down our throats a little too much, a little too quickly. I was just kind of getting
used to there's a reason for that. There's a business reason for that, actually.
I know.
Sony pays Marvel a fee to use the Spider-Man character, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of that agreement is that Sony must make Spider-Man. In order to use the Spider-Man character, you have to make a Spider-Man movie within a certain period of time, or you forfeit the option. So that's why we saw this amazing Spider-Man films come out so quickly after Spider-Man 3, after the Sam Raimi series of films. That's why this other one came out. There's simply no other reason other than Sony didn't want the franchise to revert back to Marvel.
Yeah, well.
And I really didn't care for the last film. I haven't seen the new movie. I really didn't care for the last one.
Not a fan. I'm looking forward to there are some horror movies out there that I'd like to see. I'm behind. I haven't seen Oculus. I haven't seen the Quiet Ones. I want to, but being at the Haunted Housewife, I'm busy with the housewife stuff lately. But Godzilla is one I'm definitely going to see this weekend, so I definitely want to check that out. I'm brushing up now on some of the old films. I'm kind of going through where I can and watching some of the old ones, and really, it's getting me excited about this new film. And I don't think I'm going to be disappointed. And once again, we talked about this a little bit earlier tonight. When you're sitting in the theater, the experience is just different. It's the uninterrupted experience, much like you can get on Screenbox if you're getting a film from Screenbox and watching it. So I can't wait. That is probably the only time when a lot of the special effects and the sound effects and the computer animation doesn't bother me so much, as long as it's not overwhelming.
Well, I'm fortunate in that I have a pretty decent home setup here. I just finished watching a movie on Blu-ray, and I'm pretty fortunate in that I have, like a lot of folks have nowadays. I have the big screen TV with the Blu-ray player and the surround sound thing going, so I can really, if I want to. And my kids are grown, so if Dad wants to go downstairs and rock out and put on a movie and crank it up, I can, so I can sort of get that experience at home now. I just finished watching Iron Man 3, actually, because I'm psyched up for Guardians of the Galaxy. And so I just want to make sure that I'm all caught up on all my Marvel movies. So I'm pretty fortunate in that I can get a pretty decent experience here in my lair, in my secret caves, located off of exit 18E somewhere on the New Jersey Turnpike.
I don't have that set up here at home, unfortunately, but I make do. I make do. I'll be all right.
Yeah. But it's funny because the next generation, they're acclimated to a smaller screen, to a second screen. We call it the second screen experience, where they're not necessarily always paying attention to the larger screen. And that's the part that I find fascinating, and that's the part that, I enjoy working on. Not just as a programmer, but as a creator of content as well. So ultimately, Screenbox, the goal at Screenbox is to also be able to create original material. And when you create original material, it's not about just creating a story or creating a film anymore. Now there's a website, there's an app, there's all sorts of supplemental material that has to be taken into consideration. And so that's terribly exciting as well. You know, I could be bothered with all of that.
I can't wait to see some original material coming out of Screenbox. I think it'll be fascinating. It's like being a sci-fi, but no holds bar, huh? Do what you
want.
Well,
I think that it might exist, initially it might exist in the form of interviews, going to conventions, going to film festivals, covering the genre, not so much scripted material, but one never knows what the future holds. But I would think that at the moment the emphasis would be on covering the genre, so to speak. So, but if you're catching up on your Godzilla, we'll get back to Godzilla. If you're catching up on your Godzilla movies before seeing this one, then you better run out. As soon as we're done here, I know it's late, I don't care. As soon as we're done here, listen to your Uncle Ray. Go out and see Godzilla versus Destroyer, and you're going to call me back, and you're going to thank me. You're going to weep during the ending of that movie. You will weep tears. You're not going to believe how serious and how dramatic they took the death of Godzilla in this movie. You won't believe it.
I'm going to do that. I'm definitely going to watch it, and I'm going to post
You'll
up.
Love it.
I'll make a promise to you. I'm going to get down. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to put a review up on the America's Most Haunted website, because now you've got my interest. I'm just foaming at the mouth now. I'm trying to think of these movies.
There's a few worth checking out. You know, if you're a if you're a Godzilla fan from back in the day and you haven't really kept in step with the other series of Godzilla films that came along, I truly, truly, truly recommend you see Godzilla vs. Biollante, again, because of the cornerstone, the shift in storytelling that the films took. And then the other one that I would recommend is the remake of Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. And that one was from, I want to say 94 or 91. I don't recall now. It could have been also the remake of Godzilla vs. Ghidorah from 1991. What basically happens in this storyline is there is the formation of an organization called G-Force. And G-Force is a division of the Japanese military specifically designed to deal with Godzilla. So Godzilla doesn't really become much of an Earth protector, like I had said, you know, during the High Sea series. He kind of becomes an Earth protector towards the end with Godzilla versus Destroyer and how we feel sympathetic towards him as a character, Godzilla. But these earlier ones really rock out loud. I really recommend you see them. So there's Godzilla vs. Biollante, 1989, and then Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah from 1991. These are superb movies, absolutely superb movies. Make sure that you're seeing the right one, and then I would recommend Godzilla vs. Destroyer from 1995.
Well,
see those three. Yeah. If you can hunt them down, see see those three, you can really see how the Godzilla films had changed for the better during this era. They're not as jokey.
I didn't even know that there were so many Godzilla films. I knew there were a lot. I mean, but I didn't know exactly how many there were. And it is fascinating to see how much he's changed and how the tones of the films have changed and how he's kind of gone back and forth to being representing one thing, then representing another, and
mm-hmm.
It's just amazing that he's had a very long career. I mean, he's been a very successful mm-hmm. film actor.
Mm-hmm. Got a star on the Walk of Fame, too.
How many? How many Godzilla films have there been? Do you know the exact number?
Geez, you know, I never really looked at the exact number. It's got to be 20 of them at least, I would imagine. It's funny. I don't know the exact number. I just know them all by title and what monster. I mean, it's what my wife will tell you is a selective memory.
Have that.
But I don't know the exact number, and I would be embarrassed if I had to look it up. But
curious. You know so much. I could throw a number at us.
No,
but there's
yeah,
one more
the exact...
to add. One more coming up to add.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But
great.
And so also too, I would highly recommend you see Godzilla Final Wars from 2004. Which was the very last Godzilla film made. Also, only because his design, the look of his look, I think that he, you know, there's going to be a resemblance between Godzilla's look in that film and the way Godzilla's going to look in this new movie. I think there's going to be a little bit of resemblance. So, I also highly recommend you see Final Wars. That one rocks out loud too. A lot of fun. Good movies.
Well, there's a lot to keep us busy until the 16th when this comes out. So I know that I'm going to do my research and hunt down some of these movies and see as many of the Godzilla films as I can. Now, everybody, go to the Facebook page. You can get it from the America's Most Haunted page, or you can get it directly on the Screen Box page on Facebook. Look for the giveaway. It's amazing stuff. I wish you would have thrown those slippers in. But lots of good stuff to be given away. The contest runs until the 13th, and I believe that we're going to announce it here on the show. Next week on the show, I have John Jarrett from Wolf Creek 2 coming on, but just for the first half of the show. And the second half, I'm hoping that, Ray, that you can come back on, or Gabby, just for a moment, and we can at least just announce the winner and catch up on a little bit more of Godzilla, and maybe I've seen
some
of these
movies.
Well,
you know what? Maybe I'll just have to quiz you to see if you watched any of the... I won't do that to you. Some of these movies, sadly, some of these movies might be tough to find, believe it or not, with the DVD market. Not being, you know, I mean, where do you get DVDs anymore? I would say your best bet to find these films would be, do you have like a Best Buy around or anything? If you have like a Best Buy around, go run over to the Best Buy and see if they have any of these on DVD. They can't cost more than $10 a piece. Godzilla vs. Biollante. Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah 1991, Godzilla vs. Destroyer, and Godzilla Final Wars. If you could check out those are four good ones. And if you're really into Godzilla stuff, yeah, head on over to the Facebook page, folks. Screenbox on Facebook, it's Screenbox TV. We're giving away Godzilla DVDs. We're giving away T-shirts. We're giving away toys. I mean, what's life without Godzilla toys? My God, I have so many Godzilla toys here. Hold on, you know what? I think I got a few that make noise. Hold on. I said, let's see, is there? Yeah, that's my sad
that
existence, folks. That's what
is
I
that
have.
Ringtone?
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, every time my wife calls, you hear, you know. Yeah, she'd love that. Yeah.
Well, we are well past the hour, Ray. I can't thank you enough. Back on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm so glad I had you all to myself tonight so I could talk. Again, everybody, check out the Facebook page. You can get to it from the America's Most Haunted page, Screenbox, follow them on Twitter, and tune in again next week. John Jarrett from Wolf Creek 2, and then we will be announcing the big screen box giveaway for the Godzilla prize package. And everybody run out, find those Godzilla movies and watch them and let us know how you liked them. Maybe we'll take some callers next week. All right?
All right. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Ray. I appreciate it. And good night, everybody. Tune in again next week. Check out AmericasMostHaunted.com and America's Most Haunted on Facebook and Screambox TV on Facebook. And we will see you next week. Good night.
Go Godzilla!
Go Godzilla!
So long.
Good night.